friends. Welcome back to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rotter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
Still Alice Slater.
Still me.
I'm not going to ask you what you've been reading because we're recording this back to back with the episode that we put out last week on Attica Lock. So nothing will have changed. Alice has not had time to read another book in the last 5 minutes. So we're just going to hashtag dive right in and talk about this month's book club book, which is Notes on an Execution by Danya Kukafka.
Yay!
Hit me, Alice. Let's go.
Oh, my lord. Okay, so first of all, for those of you who maybe are not familiar, our book club episodes are chock full of spoilers. We hold no bars. We share all our thoughts and feelings. So if you haven't read this book yet, then be warned. There will be spoilers. Although I will say the nature of this book means that there probably isn't really any big spoilers of it.
Yeah.
So take that as you will and do with what that as you may. So Notes on an Execution is a book about a serial killer on death row. But it's also about the women whose lives intersect with his throughout his life. The narration style is really interesting. So we have his sections, which are told in the second person, and they're all chronological, his final 24 hours. And then that's interspersed with chunks of perspective from three women that he was particularly close to. So we have his mother's perspective. Oh, I think it's third person though, isn't it?
Yeah, that one's third.
A focalized close third person. So we have his mother, a woman who he knew as a child and is now an investigating detective, and the sister of the woman that he married. What did you think of this book?
I loved it.
Tell me all your feelings.
Yeah, I knew I was gonna like it because so many people whose taste I'm interested in had loved it, and I thought, you know, I am interested in crime and punishment. I'm interested in, you know, the construction of like what makes a serial killer and why we are interested in them. I'm interested in things that like disrupt that, I guess. And I knew I would enjoy it, and I was not at all surprised that I did indeed enjoy it. And I think anyone that likes the kind of books that we like and is interested in crime, this is like bang on. Like you all like this book.
I always say I knew that I would like it. I was confident that I would like it within, like, the first few pages. But I absolutely fucking loved it. Like, I was sobbing at the end. The ending winded me. It really took... Yeah, it took a lot out of me. But we won't start at the end. We'll start at the beginning. How did you approach the second person sections? Like, being in Ansel's world in his head. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, I liked that. I found that very readable. Maybe because it was coming off the back of having read Brown Girls by Daphne Palasi Andriadis, which we have read earlier this year for an interview, which is also in the same kind of similar vibe. I really enjoyed that.
I thought it was really a really powerful and really interesting way to present his perspective.
Yeah.
Because the book is the real like core of the book is about the ways in which society valorizes serial killers. So it was really interesting to still include his voice and his story from his own viewpoint, but also it's not his viewpoint.
Yeah, because you get to observe it from outside rather than being, like, empathizing with him.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, his sense of self is kind of fragmented in that way. Like, it's almost like he's talking to himself.
Yeah.
Like, there is no audience for him. He's alone.
Yeah.
So clever. And then in terms of, like, out of the three women's perspectives, let's start with the mom. How did you find her story?
Really interesting. I really like that because to him, it was a really interesting experience to read that because to him, she is like completely absent. Like she abandoned him and his baby brother when they were like four and a baby because she was in an abusive relationship with his father, who was becoming increasingly violent, increasingly isolating them. So she abandons them and calls Child Protective Services, who come and rescue them. And that's kind of the end of her story from his perspective. But to have this woman who had, like, her whole life and motivations and choices that he was never, like, able to access or understand, I thought was very beautiful.
Really, really, really beautiful. Really fucking sad as well. And, like, the way in which the whole his life story is basically constructed via these women's stories, like, they create him, but they are not responsible for what he does or who he is. But in terms of the narrate, like, the philosophy of the narration, he is built from these other kind of parts,
interactions.
Yeah. And I think, like, the way in which the information that the mother, like, that's one of the first big chunks is her, because his story is kind of told chronologically. The way in which there are, like, kind of Easter eggs are planted that later on, as you find out, you almost forget how little he actually knows about his own life. Yeah. Because he was a tiny child, like, he doesn't know. And
there is other things that were deliberately withheld from him, it seems.
Yes.
Which
are, we don't have, need to be coy, it's a book club.
Yeah, so he believes that his baby brother died. And I don't feel super clear on whether that was intentional or... Because there is a brief moment where he recalls speaking to a social worker, and I don't know whether that's, like, accurate or not, because I don't know why a social worker would tell a four-year-old that their baby brother's dead when they're not, just because they're going to be adopted separately. That seems like a thing that I don't know if that would happen.
I feel like in the 70s anything's possible. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, I think the fact that he's very haunted by the sound of the child crying, he grows up with that echoing in his head. I feel like even if that conversation wasn't remembered accurately, that's the kind of thing that children, you know, like, that it kind of can become like an implanted memory.
Yeah, like, of course, must be dead, you know.
Yeah, because otherwise why wouldn't I know, kind of thing.
So that, you know, he doesn't have access to a lot of his story as to why he was abandoned by his parents, but then he also is haunted by things that are not actually true. You know, he was left alone with his baby brother, who then died. And obviously, probably, even though he was a four-year-old child with no resources, probably in some way blames himself for that. And that would have had a massive kind of psychological impact on him, even though it was not true.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, obviously, it creates room for his... I loosely want to use the word retribution.
Yeah.
Because by the end of the book, by the time he's caught, he's rebuilding a life with with his family, which, if he didn't have that gap, then he wouldn't have filled it with the things that he filled it with, if that makes sense. And then, but he, of course, he does grow up. So he grows up in the foster care system. And I thought that was also a very interesting setting to really deep dive into. Because I think, obviously, he is notably attractive as a kid. Like, the other children are aware that he's good looking, and it kind of plants the first seeds of, like, the kind of duality of his external versus internal life. And I really found that quite chilling.
Yeah. Because he is, like, a cute guy that the girls have a crush on. Like, he isn't, to all intents and purposes, like, a weirdo, but he really is. Like, even at a young age, he is exhibiting the classic foreshadowing signs of future murderous intent, which is, like, abusing animals and, like...
Yeah, and obviously that's where one of the kind of key, like...
flashpoints.
Yeah. And it's also, like, where he and...
Safi.
Yeah, where he and Safi first meet. And I tell you what, the tension between Safi's personal trauma from, like, knowing this kid and the trauma of investigating these murders.
When she is quite certain that he is the culprit.
But before she realises, I felt like that writing, that ability to breadcrumb plot. So as a reader, obviously the reader knows, it's not a secret, but as you watch the breadcrumbs appear that she is collecting, but she hasn't yet figured it out.
Yeah.
Very satisfying.
Agree. Completely agree. Yeah. That I found the pacing of this, like, completely perfect. I was always like, yep, not bored. Yeah. You know, just every...
Just when you're doing your personal check-ins.
Yeah. No, yeah. Everything's going fine in my brain. Yeah, because obviously the Safi sections are theoretically, like, the most kind of interesting, because that is the, like, action-y, you know, the detective trying to prove that this guy is a murderer and catch him and put him away. Like, that's the kind of action section. But yeah, I even found the Lavender, who is his mum, like those sections about her living her life in this women's commune in California. And then Hazel, who is the twin sister of the woman that he married, like watching the construction of him as an adult. Because of that way of like dropping breadcrumbs, these kind of psychological insights into the person that he was, I found very satisfying.
And then, yeah, on a line level, like the writing is just absolutely breathtakingly brilliant. And I find I generally like towards the first person, because I love very character driven work, but a book like this, that narrational like intensity, you just couldn't have from another perspective without having an incredibly pretentious character at the helm. And particularly like, because I, you know, I always stress when I talk about this book that it's a book about a serial killer, but it's also not about him. And like, I think that kind of conversation about crime, but also true crime, obviously really spoke to me and my personal interests. And that final chapter, so we have the death of Ansel. He is killed. He is murdered by the state. I use that language specifically because I think it also, you can't write about the death penalty without writing about the death penalty, you know, like talking about what it is and whether or not it's right. And like she just walks this line between humanizing him whilst also not forgiving him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that just really, I already felt like quite winded by that. It was already really having an emotional effect on me. And then to then finish the, it was almost like she was like, no, but listen, I get that you're in your feelings right now and you're feeling extreme compassion for this character that you've watched go from a very damaged, traumatized boy through like adulthood, where he's done these absolutely heinous things that are unforgivable. But now he's here at the end and there's nothing more that can be done. Like, she's like, you're in your feelings, but let's remember who this is about. And then we get, I'm getting goosebumps even talking about it, a page and a half maybe at most about each of the women that he had killed. And
the lives that they
lived. And that just absolutely, I don't think a book has hit me like that in a really long time. It was just so moving and so powerful. And, oh man, I cried my eyes out and lowered that book and was like, this is going to make waves. And if it doesn't make waves, so help me God.
I will make them.
I will be there.
Fucking rocking the boat.
Yeah. Yeah, just so powerful. And I wanted to share one of my fav quotes, if I may.
You may.
So I have two favourite quotes, one of which will trigger the next bit of convo. But yeah, listen to this. They were avid hikers and Sunday brunches, a trio of karaoke queens, ice cream lovers, morning masturbators, hosts of legendary Halloween parties. The possibilities stalked and haunted, the infinite number of lives they had not lived. Ah, oh, it's so good. It's so, so good. And then the other quote, which will lead on to our next convo. Ansel gets the glorified title of serial killer, a phrase that seems to inspire a bizarre, primitive lust. Books and documentaries and dark tunnels on the internet. Crowds of women captivated. Danya, tell us what you really think.
Yeah, so the one thing that I didn't necessarily love about this book is I don't feel that it was especially effective at dealing with it tried to deal with the complicatedness of like existing in the criminal justice system in the 21st century, and I don't think it was that effective at doing it, unfortunately, because there would just be these, you know, it's about a serial killer, a murderer of women who is on death row. And it felt like there were these moments where she tried to be like, but carceral punishment is bad. I felt like they were a little bit like, it didn't gel with the actual project of the book to be trying to deal with that, I felt. Because it felt like what she was saying was, yeah, I get it. Criminal justice system is bad, but this guy, he should be in prison. I don't know, do you know what I mean?
So I disagree with that. I don't feel like, I feel like what the book was saying is the whole system is broken. Because it shows you from the very beginning that this child was not being watched over effectively. None of those children were being watched over effectively. That the state let his mother down, the state let him down, let his brother down. The state continually let the other girls in the foster care system down. It let the women down who he encountered. It let his wife down when she was not safe. Like, I feel like the book was just kind of pointing out that, like, it's almost like a Swiss cheese situation, but the whole system, if the whole system is full of holes, then people will constantly be dropping all the way through. And it felt like his death, if that's the system, if the system sets everyone up to fail, like, there was nothing else to do with him at that point, because suddenly it's, he is the only person that can be responsible for his actions. And, like, yeah, I didn't read that as, like, a, but this guy, this is the only option. He deserves it, rather. I felt like it was more just that, like, the system is set up so there is nowhere else for him to go. There is no other choice. I don't think it presents it as a simple choice. And I don't think it presents it as the morally right choice. But maybe that's my own, like, politics. I know we have the same politics. Yeah. I'm not saying that we're, you know, that we're conflicting on that, but I just wonder if I was reading something or imprinting my own, like,
interpretation on
something that wasn't there.
Yeah, no, well, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I did just feel like it was trying to address the inadequacies of the criminal justice system, but then, yeah, I don't know, that's a feeling I often get from, like, you know, the kind of, like, true crime content, especially, like, you know, I hate to say it, but, like, made by women. So, like, women, you know, women's true crime podcasts, of which there are some very popular and famous ones, that I do feel like that is often the effect that I get coming away from them, is, like, we get, you know, we get it, the criminal justice system is broken, but this man is, like, so evil that, like, I don't know, do you know what I mean?
100%. And yeah, I don't think we need to be coy. Like, podcasts like My Favourite Murder, which I know lots of people who love that podcast really love it, and full respect, like what you like, it's all good. But they're very pro-carceral. Like, they're actively pro-carceral. They are relieved when the bad guy ends up in prison, and they celebrate when they hear that he died in prison.
Yeah.
Like, that's the standard kind of attitude. I think the problem is that, like, ultimately with fiction, like, to quote one of my favourite tweets of recent years, like, it's not a morality play.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not sure that the author's goal with this book was specifically to say whether or not prison or the death penalty were the right and just choices for this man. I feel like the thrust of the project was more about focusing on the women who are often left out of these narratives.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree. I almost wish she hadn't bothered trying to be like, but is the criminal justice system good or bad? Are there limitations to the criminal? You know, there was a bit where she was talking about, like, a black guy that was in prison, and I was like, just fucking delete this.
When you say she, do you mean, it, like, the third person narration?
No, the author, I can't remember which section it was from. Maybe it was from the Ansel...
Okay.
Section about, like, a black guy maybe called Big Bear who was also in the prison, and it was almost as if, like, he shouldn't have been there. Like, the reasons that he was in prison were, like, bad and racist. I don't know, I just felt like I could have completely lived without her trying to wrestle with, like, I don't need to know, you know, I you know, if it's not a morality play, I don't need those bits. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was my take, that I felt that it was such a, like, deep, nuanced, interesting, thorny exploration of an underexplored area, which is, like, the victims and people who aren't, you couldn't really describe as, like, victims in a traditional sense, but were, like, massively impacted negatively by this man who did some very terrible things, that I did find those bits, like, less convincing.
Yeah, okay.
That's my review. I don't think she needs to tell me whether it's good or bad. I don't need to know whether it's good or bad, but I would rather, yeah, I could have lived without them.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. As I said, I definitely didn't pick up on that in my reading, so I have nothing more to say on the subject. Goodbye.
That's okay. Would you like to hear a bit that I
yes.
loved?
Please, this please.
Bit, I don't know why it... I think maybe it struck me because this is something that I think about a lot. Okay, so it's like a little paragraph. Okay, are we ready?
I'm ready. I'm so primed.
Now, your last meal arrives. You sit on the floor with your back resting against the bed frame, holding the tray in your lap, a slippery hunk of pork chop, a lump of mashed potato, a cube of neon green jello. You cut into the meat with the side of your fork. It is the same meat they serve to the low security prisoners at the rest of the war's unit. Nothing special. The infamous last meal is no longer a thing. Banished years ago, when requests got too outlandish and a new warden took charge, the meat splits easily. You stab a chunk, bringing it to your mouth. It tastes rubbery, salty, unreal. You swallow, imagining how it will travel down your throat, then into your intestines, how it will dissolve slowly along with a photograph. Irrelevant, you know, you don't need to talk about the photograph, you just ate, but... Whatever you eat now will not have the time to pass through you. It will decompose along with your skin and your internal organs in a cheap cedar box paid for by the state, 4.5 feet below the ground in an unmarked plot at the graveyard down the road. You heave. That was it, you realise. It's already over. You missed your own last bite.
As soon as you started reading that, that line, it was over, you missed your own last bite. I remembered it immediately.
When you say breathtaking, that was the bit that I literally read and was like, like, just that idea of not even being aware of the last time, like, to know, like, I think this is the thing that freaks me out so much about, like, the death penalty, and that really haunts me, is, like, knowing when your death will be, and it being something you cannot avoid. So everything you do up until then, you are completely aware that you are doing something for the last time. So then to have done something as if it was completely normal, and then have to retroactively realize that you have just done something for the last time, chilling.
I could barely even... speak. I could barely even articulate how for me that is also something that just hit me so hard. I'm obviously anti-death penalty. I think that's clear. but the way in which she toes that line between humanizing him and like tapping into stuff that really triggers that like deep sadness and fear, like knowing that that is coming, knowing that you are counting down your final moments in such a clinical manner is so chilling to me. And yeah, I feel like to write that with such great command,
yeah, I just feel like that is a impeccable. Really good example, like that paragraph, I think is a very good little microcosm of the whole book, and like the writing of the book, and the sort of very kind of the psychological depth that often like really takes you aback. I thought that was just so good. And what I also thought was very interesting was that a way in which you are kind of more able to like bear his death is because right from the beginning, even right up until the last possible moment, he is still trying to find ways of getting out of justice, of like escaping. He's got this plan with a female prison guard, which he has cooked up that would allow him to escape. And she seems to have agreed to it. And then obviously later you find out that she has not done the thing that she said she would do. So to know that right up until the end, he is like manipulative, I think that is like a very, yeah, I liked that.
Yeah.
I don't know, I think I'm just very interested in, like, humanity, that, like, I don't want to be in his position, I don't want him to die, and also he is manipulative right up until the last possible minute, but then also, like, why would anybody want to see themselves die? Like, why would someone want to, like, be killed by the state? Like, you know, these kind of, like, things that are, like, I totally understand, like, what is going on.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's also, like, the very thorny thing about the death penalty and serial killers. Like, my position is a pacifist position. I just don't believe in violence. I do not believe in killing people, regardless of the circumstances. But obviously, for a lot of people, it's much more complicated than that. For a lot of people, the reality of when you look at, you know, someone like Ansel, this fictional serial killer, he's actually kind of, he's also kind of a lightweight. He has, his death count is 3.
Yeah, which he did all of them when he was in his late teens. So has gone through.
No, his wife.
So, yeah, so his death count as a serial killer is all some stuff that he did as a late teen.
Yeah.
So he killed 3 girls who were around his age when he was maybe like 17. And then he went for almost all of the rest of his life not being a serial killer until he murders his wife as in like later adulthood, maybe in his like 40s.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess, I mean, that I guess was my point, is that in terms of like the kind of true crime heavyweights, but you know what I mean? Like the story is quite a simple one and it's still this unbearable level of violence. You know, like 4 women is a huge number. 1 woman is horrendous, you know? But I think sometimes like being confronted with the reality of like, what do we do with these people?
Yeah.
He is not a safe person. You know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Even if he had never killed... Even if he didn't kill his wife, even if he never killed again, he had still...
Taken 3 people's
taken
lives.
Taken 3 lives, yeah. So, like, what do you do? What do you do? How is society... Yeah. What do we do with these people? What do we do with them? And obviously, like, it's one thing to contemplate the ways in which the system let him down and let these women down and let everyone down so that they ended up being in these situations that led to this. Like, that re-examining the systems only helps for in the future. It doesn't really help like the current psychopaths and serial killers that are alive and well and in society. So I think like it's interesting to kind of present that problematized, thorny landscape, you know, like,
and from the point of view of real people that are experiencing real pain as a result of this person doing what they've done.
Yeah. Especially, I don't know, like, people always say pro-death penalty, like, a pro-death penalty argument is often you would feel differently if it was your daughter, your sister, your mother, your brother, whoever. Which I always think is kind of an unhelpful thing to say, because it's like, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't make it right.
That's exactly why we don't allow relatives on the jury. Yeah. Like, we are aware of that bias.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think seeing like even Safi has complicated feelings about him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she isn't just like out to get the devil. Like,
yeah, yeah.
She has like complicated memories, fear, stitched with trauma, stitched with like this weird connection, you know, because of their shared past. Oh god, it's such a good book.
Yeah, it's a really like dense book. It has got a lot of like psychology and brain power and emotion, and yeah,
it reminded me of 2 books.
I was literally about to ask this. So if our friends listening at home have read Notes on an Execution and are like, I love that, what should I read next?
So the obvious one is Nothing Can Hurt You
by Nicola May Goldberg.
Yep. Which that one is about a woman who's found dead, and the novel is, I can't even remember how many now, maybe 5 different chapters, all from entirely different perspectives, telling their own story, almost like interconnected short stories, every one of which somehow relates to the woman who died. So it reminded me of that. But then it also reminded me of, although very different, it reminded me of Rachel Monroe.
Yeah, Savage Appetites. Our fave.
Our absolute fave.
As we said on a recent episode, not published in Rainy Fascism Island.
Which is completely wild to me, but it's probably, I don't know.
You're a better explainer than me, so explain Savage Appetites to our friends at home. Because it is completely possible to get it in this country. You can get it from Blackwell's.
Yep, you can get an American import. I recommend Blackwell's. So basically, Savage Appetites is a non-fiction look at true crime through the lens of 4 different women who, in one way or another, became obsessed with crime. So we have the position of detective, victim, fan, and murderer.
Yeah.
And so we have, like...
I don't know if she was... Didn't they stop before the murder happened?
Yeah, but it's approaching... She was obsessed with...
Columbine.
Yeah. So, like, it's just, it's more that, like, how one, who one, like, sympathizes or empathizes the most with within crime narratives. So, like, with her, although they did not end up actually committing any murders, that was the role that she was most intrigued by. Anyway, it's so fucking good. I always tell people, because this has happened a few times now, it opens with the writer attending a true crime festival, and then, which is fascinating. And then the first chapter is about, I can't remember her name, the woman who created the miniature crime scenes. I want to call them the nutting thingies. Anyway, it opens with that, which is a more historical, that I think this, it's 1930s, a woman playing role of detective. She made like little doll's house miniature to scale crime scenes, which are used for forensic study. I found that fucking fascinating, but I know lots of people that did not enjoy that story particularly and then gave up on the book. If you're not into that one, skip it. The next one, I can't remember if it's the West Memphis 3 or Columbine, I can't remember, but it, from then on, it's more contemporary. Yeah. It's a more contemporary stories, and it's just really great. So yeah, it really reminded me of that. Just like the different approaches and the different interests to crime. Did it remind you of anything else?
Not that I could actually, not in terms of like crime, really. I feel like in a way it has more in common with literary fiction novels.
Yeah.
But I can't think of any in particular that I would say. And I also don't necessarily think that anyone needs a recommendation for like another literary fiction novel. Whereas like, I think the crimey stuff will be what you would want to bounce onto next. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, agreed. Well, that's that.
We have nothing else to say about Notes on an Execution other than it slaps. It's out now, so you can get it. Although I would hope that you would have already read it by the time you listen to this. But I can't tell you what to do. Anyway,
I would say if you're listening to this and you haven't read it and you were like, I'm probably not going to read this, so I'll just listen anyway. On a light, the thing that makes this book sing
is the writing. Yeah, 100%. So
like, even if you've just had all the spoilies that your heart's desire, that your heart desires, like, there, it's still so worth reading this book.
Yeah, and I feel like there is so much in terms of the like breadcrumbs and things that are revealed that we haven't even gotten to that like you would find really striking. So I would say read it anyway, even if you've got this far and ain't read it.
I was about to say, now there's an alarm going off outside, but then it stopped, so whatever.
But we're still enough. We're still gonna go.
That's enough.
We don't need an alarm to tell us what to do. We're gonna do it anyway. Anyway, we'll see you next time.
Bye!